James R. Smith Trucking Company. And thanks that for everything that they do and for everyone that works at James R. Smith that they do for our community. We'd also like to thank our corporate sponsor for this event, Yeltech, for their support. At this time, I'd like to ask Nisha Donaldson with Coleman Regional, who is my co-chair on the Chamber's Business and Community Advocacy Initiative, to please come forward and provide our invocation and pledge.
Let's pray. Father in heaven, we come to you today to thank you for this community that we live in and for all the many blessings that we have. And Father, we pray for wisdom and we pray for guidance that the decisions made will be the best thing for the citizens and be done in accordance with your will. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. Would you stand, please, for the pledge? Attention, salute, pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Nisha. Out of respect for our moderators and our candidates, I'd like to ask everyone just to check your cell phones before we get started and make sure that they have been switched into silent mode. Backstage, just a few minutes ago, each candidate drew a number to determine the sequence of our questioning. Each candidate will be asked the same questions and given 2 minutes to respond. In the event there is a follow-up question for any candidate, that candidate will be given 1 minute to provide their answers, and any follow-up questions will be at the discretion of our moderators. The candidates will rotate in the order of the number they drew backstage. The rotation sequence will continue in this fashion through the end of the question and answer portion of the forum. In the interest of time, there will be no opening statements. There will, however, be an opportunity for each candidate to provide a closing statement. These closing statements, which will proceed in alphabetical order, will be no longer than 1 minute. It will also be noted that no candidate received these questions that they'll be answering today prior to this event. A chamber staff person will act as timekeeper and provide each of the candidates with a countdown during their answers or comments by holding up a card to indicate the time remaining. A bell will sound at the end of 2 minutes, at which time the candidate will be allowed to complete their sentence. I'll now introduce our candidates in alphabetical order and just ask them to come forward as we do this. James Bowling.
James, and you're going to be in this first seat right here.
Yeah. Paul Bussman. Alex Cheney. Garland Gudger. Corey Harbison. Justin Morrow.
You're right next to Paul.
And Scott Stahagen.
There's only one left.
Yes, we'll go with that order. Yeah, we'll go with this order.
Our moderators this evening are Tim Culpepper, Government Affairs Committee Chairman, and Suzanne Harbin, Government Affairs Committee member. As I stated earlier, our questions order was determined by the random draw backstage, and as each of the candidates came out, they are seated in that order, starting with James Bowling here to my left. So, our moderators, you can begin.
Okay, good afternoon. We're going to begin with our first question with James Bowling. You pull it closer.
don't envy you guys. I did this myself 2 years ago. It's a little unnerving, even if you are out in the public all the time. So good luck to all of you. Our first question is, why are you seeking to be elected or reelected for state, senate, or representative?
I've been a public servant for most of my life. I've been in the fire department since I was a young kid as a junior firefighter. And this is just another way to step up and help my community.
Okay. Senator Busman?
Same question. Well, the way I look at it is we are in Alabama are very lucky. We have the best resources. We have the best weather. We have the best opportunities for jobs. We have the best opportunities for business. We have some great schools. One of the main things that I think we can do is I think we can continue to do better. We can't continue to be 49th in the state in education. We've got to get better. There's so many things that we can do and so many opportunities in the state of Alabama that we can do to make this place the best state in the country. I mean, we have so many things already that's just sitting there. We've got the automobile industry now that is huge in the state of Alabama. We have the aeronautics industry that's huge in the state of Alabama. We need to continue to grow Alabama. We need to continue to educate our kids. We need to continue to provide career training for those that need jobs. We need to continue to make it available for them to have jobs. And we need to continue to make it available for them to live and raise a family. And so my goal is, in running again, is to continue the process that we've started over the last 7 years. You know, when I first came in, we were in coming out of the worst depression since the Great Depression. Since we've been in office, we now have the lowest unemployment in state history. We've not had proration in the last 8 years. We just passed a significant tax cut for the citizens of Alabama. We just passed broadband for the rural communities. There's a lot of things that we can do. There's a lot of things that we've done, and there's a lot of things that I think we can continue to do, and I'd like to be a part of that.
Thank you. Mr. Morrow?
You know, a lot of us, or going into college, graduating high school, you may have known that you want to be a doctor, lawyer, mechanic. I never knew exactly what I wanted to do as a career. I just knew that I wanted to do something where I help people and serve people, because that's what we're put here. We're put here to serve God and to serve others. And so I wanted to do something with that in my life. And I get to help people now, and I serve people, but I feel that now I'm given the opportunity to serve tens of thousands of my neighbors and potentially the whole state. So that's the reason I'm running, just to have that opportunity to serve. Growing up in the area, experiencing our state education system firsthand, knowing the teachers and schools, knowing their needs, I can relate to a lot of that. So that's the main reason I'm running there.
Thank you. Mr. Cheney?
Yes, ma'am. I'm born and raised here in Coleman County. I'm a fifth-generation Coleman native. Coleman County is a special place to me. It means a lot to me. It's a special place in my heart. I honestly believe that Coleman County residents are some of the most honest, hardworking Christian citizens in the state of Alabama. A lot of places aren't like Coleman. Montgomery sure is not like Coleman County. I'm proud of that. I come from a very service-oriented family. My grandparents served Coleman County. My parents served Coleman County. And given the opportunity, I would look forward to serving my hometown, Coleman County, as well. Thank you.
Being the past chair of the Hartsville Area Chamber of Commerce, now sit on the board of directors for the chamber. I'm involved in Kiwanis and Rotary. The reason why I wanted to run is to serve the people of our district the way I have Hartsville. We started a project, Hartsville Farmers Market. Kind of took that on, grabbed it by the horns, and after that project, the response that the community gave to us, I knew that my job wasn't done. Wasn't really looking for it, just knew I wanted to do more. Through prayer, this is where I ended up. I want to be a voice to the people. I want us to have town hall meetings. I want to truly represent our district in Montgomery, and I want to be present here and also present in Montgomery. Thank you.
I also come from a family that has been in Coleman County for years and years. You know, my first son is due July 5th, and we're going to name him Hans. And I know I've told this story before, but Hans was my fourth great-grandfather, and he was the first mayor of the city of Hansville, you know, years and years ago. So that tells you, we were here even before that. But I decided at an early age that I wanted to be involved in public service. You know, I don't consider myself a politician, and I definitely don't want to make a career out of this. But I ran for mayor when I was 22 years old, and I was elected at the city of Good Hope. Had a great council to work with. Susan is in here. She was on there with me. Jerry was a council member, and I felt like we made good progress for the city of Good Hope. You know, and I was always taught, if you don't like the way something is, then do something about it. And I was content with being mayor. I think we were doing good things. And, hey, as far as my family, we've just been common, you know, factory workers, and we didn't have a big name, never have in this county. But hardworking folks and community dedicated. But so there was a couple of issues that came up, and you know, I was just not pleased with the feedback that I had received when I approached the original representative that I ran against. And so I decided, hey, I'm going to run and give the folks of Coleman another choice. And so I'll put my name in the hat. And you know, I just want to serve. I want to help Alabama grow. And especially now with my son on the way, I want to ensure that we have the best education system possible in the United States and just a nice, clean state to live in. Thank you.
I believe the question was, is why aren't we running, correct? The answer to that is the same as it was when I first ran for elected office in 2004. The answer is still the same for me today. And that is, I want to make this place and now District 4 the best place that it can possibly be to live, work, play, and worship. I was I'm a lifelong native of Coleman, Alabama. I decided to leave on a football scholarship to Samford University in 1993. I never thought I'd come back, to be honest with you. After I got through, I finished up at Auburn in building science. After I transferred there, my father came to see me in Auburn, which was a rare occasion. And he said, I want you to come back. I'm in bad health, and I want you to come back and take over the store. I decided to do that. From 1999, February 1st, until 2003, I worked as hard as I possibly could to continue as a second-generation small business owner. In 2004, I was laying in bed one night with my wife, and she has a side table, and I have one, and she has a little light, and I have a little light. And I must have been complaining about the city of Coleman and downtown because I wanted to see the downtown grow. And one night, she leaned over to me, and she said, if you're going to continue to complain about downtown, then you need to do something about it and run for office. Next day, I went and signed up to run. I won against an incumbent, and I have been working for the city of Coleman and for my constituents of the 15,000 people that live in this city and this community since then. I want to continue to take the same growth template that the city of Coleman, since 2004 until today, has grown in every aspect, industrial, big box retail, small business, and every aspect underneath there, and take it to District 4 also. But I'm running for the same reasons. Thank you.
Okay, our second question, and this question is to you, Senator Busman. We are at or near full employment, and the demand for more specialized technical jobs is growing, but the state funding and support for technical education has been inconsistent. How can the state help to develop an educated technical workforce to meet that demand?
First off, you've got to have somebody willing to stand up to higher education. Right now in the state of Alabama, higher education dictates what goes on in the education budget. They dictate who gets what and how much they get. And that's the biggest problem we have. The higher education has a tremendous lobby that goes to our offices every day and fights every day to make sure higher education is taken care of. And that's at the expense of K-12. When you go and you start looking at the budgets like I do, you find that higher education will go out and buy a piece of property like Bryce Partlow property in Tuscaloosa. K-12 paid 60 paid 73% of that purchase. When the Swirl Center was built up in Huntsville at UAH, K-12 paid 73% of that construction. That's wrong. That's wrong to make K-12, take money out of K-12 and pay for buildings that they're building at universities on our university campuses. If you go to a university campus now, you see growth everywhere. You go into some of our community schools and community colleges, and they're having trouble even keeping the ceilings from leaking. That's wrong. We've got to fix that. And what we need in Alabama is somebody that's going to stand up and be counted against those people of higher education. And for the last 2 years, I stood at the well sometimes for 2 days in a row fighting for K-12, fighting to keep funding in K-12 that people were taking and sending to higher education. And I'll keep doing that. And the reason that I will do that is because K-12 needs that help, and that's the right thing to do. And it doesn't matter to me who's on the other side. I'm going to fight for the right thing to do, and K-12 deserves that money. And the only way we're going to improve our system is to increase funding into K-12, increase teachers' pay, increase support staff pay, and that's exactly what we've done in the last 6 or 7 years.
Mr. Morrow?
I realize that college is not for everyone. We all know that. With all the trade, with all the manufacturing jobs, that we've done an excellent job Alabama has of bringing those jobs in. We need to be pushing more trade school involvement. I would love to see more investment from the state and business partners throughout the whole state with trade schools, tech schools, because a skilled tradesman can do just as well as a person with a college degree. I knew a guy who dropped out of high school at 18 years old, and our senior year, he's an underwater welder making six figures a year. Now, he completely bucked the system there with dropping out of high school, but just showing that they can do just as well. We've pushed and pushed college so hard, and I was the first one in my family to go to college, and I wanted to. I had that drive. I wanted to do that, but we've devalued college degrees, and that's across the nation. And now we have all these tech jobs that we're in need of. Better education does lead to better jobs, but we can't fill these jobs coming into the state with like Toyota, Mazda. Y'all have Ray Hall here. We need trades. We need skilled tradesmen for those jobs. So I just want to see more investment with the state in these trade school programs.
Mr. Cheney?
We are very fortunate here in Cullman County to have an excellent school system, which I'm a product of. A lot of places all across the state do not have that kind of school infrastructure. Here in Cullman County, Wallace State obviously is a great resource for anybody that's trying to go to a four-year university or a technical education. We're very fortunate to have that. But for me, I see that education and the economic growth are linked. We have all these businesses coming into Cullman County, which is fortunate, which is great, but we need to have the education to have those people to be able to work for that industry when it comes. And again, District 12 and 11 and District 9 are doing great things in that regard. Businesses are coming from all across the state and the country to Cullman County because of our education system we have here. I think we're fortunate to have that. But I would like to see more technical programs like Wallace State across the state. Again, everybody doesn't have to go to a four-year university, University of Alabama, University of Auburn, University of North Alabama. But if you can get a great education at a technical school like Wallace College, we'll be in good shape. Thank you.
Mr. Steinhagen.
We just got back from Washington. And we asked Shelby for some items for our education in our city. He told us to find a grant. So we're still looking for that grant. But I agree with Paul. We need to attack these earmarks. We need to find where this money's going. We need to stand up for the teachers in our educational system. We need to listen to them and see what their needs are. As chair of the chamber, I've had the privilege of working with our superintendents with our workforce program. We're currently looking for a location, and it's huge. We're in dire need of it right now. Being a business owner, I own Hagen Homes, and our trades, from 20 to 40, we're in desperate need of them. They're 45 and up. So another 10 years when those guys can't do it anymore, we're in trouble. We pushed college for so long, my generation, my parents, my mom pushed college, 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 and that's what we did. Nobody pushed trades. So I think we're starting to see that. We're actually feeling it. So we need to capitalize on that. We need to just stand up for our teachers, and we need to go through our budget and find out where we can get money and utilize it.
Mr. Arberson.
I was the first person in my family, out of my cousins and aunts and uncles and everyone, to go and receive a college degree. So I received an academic leadership scholarship to Wallace State for my first 2 years, and then I went to Athens State to receive my bachelor's degree. And when I was in school, it's true, they pushed college. But, you know, we went a couple weeks ago. I went with a group of folks from Coleman, and we toured a trade school in Tuscaloosa. And I do think that facility was awesome. I mean, I know it costs a lot of money, but we're going to have to invest in those type programs. You know, I think that we've got great industry here in Coleman, and we need to partner with those industries. And if I was the plant manager, I would be willing to invest money into these training programs, because it will produce better trained workforce for those guys in the future. So I understand that it's going to take money, but I still believe there's a lot of waste going out in the public school system and now the education fund. You know, we keep allowing cities to open up new school systems that are non-established, and every time they do, that chips away money out of our education fund that should be going into classrooms to downgrade the size of the classrooms, you know, to put back into the children for education. And so, you know, I think that it's very important that we teach the kids that there's not a problem if you don't want to go to college, but you do need to go to a trade school, and there's no problem going to trade school. You know, years ago, it was a stigma that I think most kids, they were embarrassed to attend the trade school, and it doesn't need to be that way. I think it's important that they learn a trade, and it's important that we start early teaching that. Thank you.
Mr. Gudger.
Being in a small business where I deal with carpentry every day, I see the need for vocational skill sets coming in from a younger generation and older generation, for that matter. As my father was the dean of students, the first dean of students at Wallace State, and my mother is one of the first female instructors at Wallace State, I was the little rugrat running around in Wallace back in the day. And at that same time, there was still a stigma on people that went to vocational school. Today, we talk about that stigma because that's what I remember and my parents remember, but there's not one. You start having a young gentleman go to Wallace, go to the vocational school for training. He's a welder. He's a carpenter. He's an electrician. He's a robotics instructor. He does auto body. The ladies even do cosmetology. A chef. They're using their hands. They're using their creativity and their imagination, and they're making money. More money than if they went to a four-year school, because when you get out of that four-year school, you've had to pay for so much training that most of those kids are in debt. Well, now they're coming out and they're making $60,000 right off the bat without any debt. The second thing besides doing that, you have to have funding. If being in charge of the city council's budget with my fellow council members and the mayor, you have to prioritize your spending. You have to be able to figure out where you can cut if you want something to happen. And in those budgets, if you want more vocational training, you have to fund that, and you have to find a way within your budget to do that. Sometimes that means cutting a different area. But if that's what you want in priority training, which it is for me, I think that when I go to Montgomery, I would be looking for that extra funding. And then number three, communication. Bevel State and their campus over in Hamilton right now just cut 9 jobs and all of their vocational training from that community college. Without communication from the state boards, from the legislatures at the state, going down to the school boards that are local and to the administrators and superintendents, you're not going to have communication. You're going to have animosity, and no one needs that to be able to make this district move forward. Thank you.
Mr. Bowling.
As a product of our state school system, there's a lot to be done. I am a tradesman. I'm an industrial maintenance mechanic. I've been preaching about technical school since 2002. I was the dumb factory worker. That's pretty much what the way people looked at it back then. Had people took the initiative in 2002, 2004, 2006, how many of the jobs would we be taking from Toyota Mazda that we're giving away to other states because we can't provide the employees to fill them? So technical classes is a big deal, and it's going forward. Coming into a plant, once you're in a trade, yes, you make more money than people coming out of college with a four-year degree. I can attest to that. So we have a lot to do on that front to bring even more jobs in, and it's going to be through our workforce, and that's going to come out of our high schools, partnering with the different companies to have co-op programs so that when the kids come out of high school, they can either go to college or they can go into the workforce. The second is going to be funding. And with all the earmarks right now, we need to figure out a way to get rid of earmarks. Earmarks is killing our funding, not only in education but across the state. We have to get over that hurdle so that we can get more money into the classroom and reduce our class sizes. I believe that'll help make things better in our education for the state.
Okay, our next question will begin with Mr. Morrow. In your opinion, what is the number one challenge facing the Alabama legislature during the next 4 years?
I know we keep talking about education funding, and you asked what's the one of the main hurdles there for the next 4 years is, I'm sorry, education to me is on the forefront. I know we keep going back to that, but that's on the forefront. If we want to keep bringing in these jobs, that's something we have to look at. Another thing to keep in mind to keep the economy going and keep jobs going is we need to make sure that we keep regulations cut. Do not restrict businesses. For any of you business owners out there, you know that the more the government squeezes, the harder it is on you. So we need to make sure that we're keeping that cut. But like I said, I'm still going to go back to the education point there with bringing all these manufacturing jobs. That needs to be our main focus.
Mr. Cheney?
Well, that's really a loaded question. There's so much that the state needs. But I know the first and foremost job for the state legislature and the Senate is passing a budget. And here in the state of Alabama, there's always going to be a funding crisis. That's not going to change. But currently, we've got some major issues that's going on around our state right now. The prison system. Right now, there's prison overcrowding to the point where the federal government is about to come and release inmates on a court order. That's unacceptable. The mental health issue. Our state legislature has currently failed to address the mental health issue that's plaguing this state. People are dying. The mental health, they're filling our jails, our cemeteries. It's an epidemic currently. The drug issue fits right in there between both of them, the prison system and the mental health issue. The opioid epidemic also is an issue that's going to be, we're going to have to deal with in the near future. So as far as number one issue, I'm getting my minute here, to sum up, we've got to address these issues with the prison overcrowding and the mental health issue and settle it on a local basis. Mental health is the prison system here. Everybody's going to get sent to the prison jails, but we've got to have a diversion or some kind of process in place here locally to try to stop prison overcrowding. And we have to do something here on a local level to address the mental health issues. Thank you.
Mr. Stahagen?
You said just one, correct? Okay.
Yes.
My top one's going to be infrastructure. And it plays such a vital role in our state. And it's actually embarrassing to me when you cross our state lines, you can tell what state you're in without even seeing the state sign. You can tell you're on Alabama asphalt instead of Florida, Georgia, or Tennessee. So I think we need to focus on that for several reasons. Our kids travel to school on school buses on this infrastructure that needs a lot of work. We've got 1,200 bridges in the state of Alabama that are not structurally sound, that we drive on every day, that our kids drive on, our school buses, and our freight. And also, when we're trying to gather all this information for these big companies, My hats are off to Tommy Battle in Huntsville. For Mazda Toyota plant to come with the infrastructure we had, it's impressive. We need to be appealing to them. We need to look good. We need to have a pretty bow tie on for all these industries that come in with our infrastructure. They need to know that their freight is safe coming in and out. So number one to me is my kids' safety, traveling to school and back, bringing in jobs, bringing in new industry through our infrastructure. Thanks.
Mr. Harbison.
I do believe that our state's education system is probably the most important thing that we as the legislature deals with. If we could improve our education system, and I'm not knocking teachers, we've got great teachers, but you know, we our education scores are low in the state of Alabama, and unfortunately, poverty goes hand in hand with low test scores and them not being able to get jobs and end up on Medicaid and going to prisons. So I think we're going to have to improve our education system and the curriculums that we use to teach the students. You know, our infrastructure, like Scott said, it is very important. I-65 is a nightmare through Coleman County, you know, and myself, and I know Senator Busman as well, we've been hounding ALDOT since October to finish that project up. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize that our hands are tied in those situations. The director of ALDOT is appointed by the governor. And, you know, I think overall those guys, they try to work with us. But if they want to stick their boot up and kick us out, they can. You know, they don't have to listen to us. So I think we're going to have to do something to work with ALDOT to maybe allow the legislature to have more input on the projects that they choose and how they spend their money. Because I think that there's a lot of people around this district especially who are unhappy about several of the projects that they've done lately. But again, overall, I think if we invest in education and we improve our education system, a lot of the other problems will take care of themselves. So that would be my number one issue.
You're listening to the State of the Communities event on WRJM-LP, Coleman.
In your opinion, what is the number one challenge facing the Alabama legislature during the next 4 years?
I just wanted to make sure you said challenge. All right, the number one challenge as a local representative handling millions and millions of dollars for this community for the last 14 years is funding, and it always will be every year from now on. You deal with the issues. The challenge is funding and how we cut it and how we spend it to each of the departments. The issues are education, mental illness, infrastructure, back to education, vocational training, and any new programs that we're wanting to decide and invest in. How we handle our funding is how we have a reflection of the rest of this state for the rest of the nation. We are able to figure out our vision, as I am with the city council here, and take that vision to the rest of the city council and make that vision come to reality. If I go to Montgomery, I'll have to do the same thing with senators and the other 105 House members to say, this is where I think the funding should go. This is how I think we should handle funding, how we should handle cutting and spending, and be able to handle all of the issues that we're talking about, and probably through the rest of this forum anyway. But the number one challenge, I believe, is funding.
Mr. Bowling.
I'm going to have to say infrastructure. The next legislative session is going to be the best possible choice for the big ones in Montgomery to push a gas tax on everybody. That should be the last resort, not the first resort. Right now, there's over $60 million been taken out of DOT, and I believe we need to figure a way to put this money back into DOT's funding before we ask for folks to come out of their pocket with another tax. And I believe that's going to be a big part of the first session. Just over the last couple of years, it's come up. This session, it didn't. I didn't hear much about it, but I believe next year it's going to be a gas tax. They're trying to improve our infrastructure. I owned a trucking company for several years, so the bridges that are subpar, they're out in the rural parts of the counties. They're not in the cities. They're out in the counties. I've experienced this firsthand. I went one direction to pick up product from a farmer and had to drive over 40 miles around to get back to where I was going because of the bridges. They couldn't hold the weight. They was rated with the weight restrictions they had. So to further our our industrial wave that we've been doing in Alabama. I believe our infrastructure is going to play a big key in that, and getting our funding correct and education. But that's every year issue. That's not just going to be the most important one year. I mean, that's an important issue every legislative session. They're trying to find funding to put back into education to help our teachers. So between the infrastructure and the education, I believe we've got a long road to hold to try to make it right.
Senator Busman?
Y'all going to be surprised at my answer. I think the biggest thing that we're going to face in the next 4 years is who's going to control Alabama. Is it going to be the people of Alabama, or is it going to be the special interest of Alabama? I think it's so important this next 4 years that we find a Senate and we find a House of Representatives that has integrity. We've seen over the last couple of years, we've seen governors go down. We've seen Speaker of the House go down. We've seen House members go down. We've seen lobbyists go down. I went in 2010 with a group of people that I thought would be stalwart, stellar senators, and I've watched the system chew them up like a shredder. It's a tough business. It's a bad business. It's an ugly business. And it depends on who you've got in that position to make the decisions for you. And everything I've done in that legislature has been for the people in my district, the 150,000 people that I represent. I never walk into the chamber thinking I'm going in for Paul Busman. I'm going in to represent 150,000 people. And sometimes those votes are very difficult to make. Sometimes there's tremendous pressure from leadership, from special interests, from people saying you're not going to get reelected if you don't vote this way. I've never cast a vote with that worry. Every vote I've made has been what's been right for my district. And I think you're going to find that's going to be the most important thing over the next 4 years, is that the legislature does what you want them to do and not what some special interest wants them to do, and that's going to be critical. And I can tell you, as long as I'm there, even if it costs me a position on a committee, if it costs me a position anywhere, I'm going to vote for y'all.
This next question is for you, Mr. Cheney. The legislature recently passed incentives to encourage rural broadband. How can we further develop broadband in rural areas?
Let me start off by saying that I believe that technology is going to be the future of the state of Alabama. We've got in Coleman County, we're agriculture-based mainly, and I'm proud of that. But technology can be applied to agriculture as well. And I think we're seeing that from the chicken operations to beef production, raising hay. Broadband is a necessity. I know there's parts, and I've been fortunate to travel a pretty good bit here around District 12, and there's parts in Buck Tussle and Logan that do not have internet. That's unacceptable. I know the city of Huntsville has a city incentive to bring high-speed internet to those areas, and it's going to increase the economic development in that area. I think in District 12 or in Coleman County, we need to be looking at something along those same lines to try to increase the broadband internet to increase our production here in this town. Thank you.
Mr. Stahagen.
Broadband is extremely important. As a home builder, we go out in rural areas and people don't want to purchase land or build a house because they can't get internet. That hurts me. That hurts a lot of folks, but also it hurts our industry. You know, when those 30 itemized lists that the industry has for you to meet, for them to come to your area, that's going to be on number one or two. That's a requirement that they have to have, especially the way technology is going these days. So we have to take advantage of that, and we have to get on top of it and make sure that happens.
Mr. Robertson.
Broadband is very important to the community. You take a place like Hired Hand out at Cold Springs and places in the rural parts of the county, they have to have high high-speed internet to operate, because they may be having conference calls with somebody from China or anywhere else in the world. I think the future of the broadband is not going to be putting a wire in the ground or running a line from pole to pole to get the broadband to the residents. We had a ribbon cutting, I guess about this time last year, maybe out at Brushy Pine, with AT&T. And what they've started doing is putting broadband from cell phone towers. And I think that's a much better way to do it. And I think that's what you're going to see a lot of in the future, because it costs so much money to run those lines in the ground. And me, I do not have broadband accessible where I live. So, you know, financially, the state can't bear the burden to give them the money to do it. I mean, it just the cost would be unbelievable. And the companies can't afford to do it, because there's no way they will ever get their returns. But when they invest in the towers, and you can tie several hundred households onto the towers to get broadband, you know, it's a good investment. So it worked out well for us in Coleman County that AT&T bought out Core Wireless, because that gave them a lot more cell phone towers in our area. So myself, that's what I'm going to be working with AT&T to try to push with rural broadband to get it on the cell phone towers. And the feedback that I've heard from that at Cold Springs and Brushy Pine is the people who have purchased that and are using it, they say it's great. So I hope that we can do something and get more broadband in the rural parts of the county in the next 4 years.
Mr. Gudger.
I think broadband is the new water. We need it. Everyone in this room wants it. You have a phone in your pocket that picks it up. You go to your house, you have a laptop, you can travel anywhere you want to, and you can still get it, whether it's a hotel or whether it's a gas station or you pull up to the side at a coffee shop. You're going to have internet, and we need broadband. The hard part of being able to bring broadband to rural areas is that technology is moving so fast that even the city of Coleman applied for a grant. We received that a year and a half, 2 years ago, where we were going to be running fiber from with Southern Lights from Mobile all the way to Chicago. Well, since then, they've been bought out. You're not able to use that fiber anymore, and the best way to do that is wireless from tower to tower. If you're able to get tower to tower broadband, it's the fastest and the most efficient way to do that. But again, that technology is not in Coleman County right now. So the way to do it currently is to work with conglomerates like AT&T and U-verse with your local officials and your state officials for funding, so that you're able to bring that to rural areas by applying for grants, because a lot of the rural areas aren't able to match, whether it's a 20% grant, a 50% grant. And so by able to us help aid funding to these rural communities, that's the best way for these rural communities to have broadband, to help economic development, to produce jobs, and just to have a better quality of life. Thank you.
Mr. Bowling.
Broadband's actually one of the topics and issues that I talked about last year when I announced I was going to run for the House. It's vital not only to agriculture, to our schools. It's also a necessity for our first responders, our air ambulance systems. I know this because we hosted an air ambulance in our fire department in Danville. They had to have a T1 connection put in before they would locate, because they had to have high-speed internet. Their systems was running off of the web. They had to have it. And I believe to improve that in the state, we need to open up the free market. Let others come in and help expand the systems. Quit giving monopolies to one or two companies. And that's exactly what they was asking for the session before last. That's why it didn't pass, and it waited to this past session to go through, because some of the big companies, they wanted a monopoly on it. They wanted to be the only ones that could provide it. So really, to improve upon it, to open it up where others can come in and compete. Wireless is the new hard line. You know, everybody used to have a telephone line running through their yards. No longer. Everybody uses a cell phone. I don't know many people that even has a regular home phone anymore. And with the broadband, everything's going to IP-based. So even your telephones are going through your broadband now. And that's what our industries, they're looking for. It's one of the very first things they ask for when it comes to infrastructure. It's high-speed internet access. They know the power companies run power and the water companies run water. but they want to know that they got access to high-speed internet.
Senator Busman.
I can honestly tell you that, passing the rural broadband bill this year was one of the best accomplishments that we did. I worked very hard with Senator Schofield on this. We dealt with AT&T, we dealt with Verizon, we dealt with all the big people. And that's the best thing that could have come out of the state this year for rural Alabama. And why is that? The first reason is you're going to start seeing a financial divide in this state. The urban areas that have high-speed internet, have good access to broadband, are going to expand. They're going to grow. They're going to do well. The businesses are going to do well. If you're in an area of rural Alabama, whether it be Double Springs or whether it be Marion County or whether it be smaller areas in our county, if you can't have access to broadband and high-speed access to the internet, you can't even run a small business anymore. And so that is critical. And we've got to make sure that we're spreading out broadband everywhere we need to go so everybody can thrive and so everybody can be successful. We don't need to pick and choose who's going to win and who's going to lose. Government does that a lot, but we need to make sure our rural areas have access to broadband. You know, we spend a whole lot of money. There's big talk about education, going out and buying tablets for everybody. Well, that's fine and good if you're in the city of Coleman. Everybody can go home and have access to the internet. You get over into Winston County, you get over to Phillips High School or Hackleburg High School, it doesn't matter whether they got tablets or not. When they get home, they don't have access to the internet. How are they going to do their homework? How are they going to do business? How is the man that's selling parts for whatever that part may be, how is he going to sell that on the market when he can't get access to the internet? When the pictures he's got of his product can't even be downloaded in a speed that is reasonable. That is critical for this state, and it's critical for rural Alabama. And that's why the rural legislators have gotten together and worked on this as a group.
Mr. Morrow.
I live in one of those areas in my district that there is no internet. And it's a strain. Mr. Gudger was right. Internet has become a necessity now, a needed utility. And not just, and I think we all agree on that. Not only is it hurting development, it is, but I got thinking when I was in Athens State finishing up my bachelor's degree, I was doing a lot of online courses. Well, I was having to go to the library or anywhere that had internet to do this. And I got to thinking that kids in school who live in these rural areas are at a huge disadvantage. Their parents may not be able to take them every evening to go use the internet to do research on a report. Technology has moved so fast that we didn't have time in our personal lives and out in the areas to catch up. And so development for broadband across rural areas we should have started a long time ago. The problem moved so fast we didn't see it coming. That is going to be a major issue that we've got to work on, mainly just so people aren't sitting at a disadvantage as far as even industry development in areas, building homes, or just the main thing of our kids in school that have to have that. Thank you.
Okay. Our next question will begin with Mr. Stahagen. Somebody's already referenced the upcoming session about a gas tax, the possibility of that. If a gas tax is passed, how would you advocate for the revenue to be utilized in Coleman County and for what purposes?
So if the gas, repeat one more time, if it's passed.
If it's passed, how would you advocate for the revenue to be utilized and for what purposes?
Okay. I think we need to look, as of right now, it's separated from counties to municipalities. And we need to look at that and make sure it's a fair percentage towards each one. I know that's been a lot of concerns with our municipalities and also with our counties. You've got a lot of freight coming into our municipalities that do a lot more wear and tear, is their argument. And then you've got farmers out in the county that say we've got the same thing. So I think we need to address that first. And first we need to make sure that the people have a voice in it, that they can voice their concerns to see what they, you know, what is done with it. And that's about it. I mean, we just need to make sure that it's divided equally.
Representative Harbison.
So, if a gas tax is passed, I want to ensure that it is a tax that actually goes to roads, and they don't, you know, the government's good at taking money that's currently going to something if it's not earmarked there and moving it over here. So if we create more money for the roads, I want to ensure that they can't pull money that's currently going to roads and send it somewhere else. You know, we talk about roads, but we've got just a big problem with bridges in the state. You know, I think about Cold Springs, Brushy Pond area, Big Bridge. If something were to happen with Big Bridge, I don't know how the county commission could ever afford to replace it. I don't think they could. We're talking millions of dollars. But, you know, there would have to be some stipulations on the gas tax that says that it has to go for new asphalt or for bridges, that has to be spent on roads, that it can't go to jobs to hire somebody's friends. And I just feel like the people of District 12, they're not to the point that they're willing to pay more on their gas, that they like to see, you know, some of the money that's there managed a little bit better, and there is some waste there. So one of the problems that I had with the bill last year, and I was going to vote no on it, was the current system with the gas tax, the percentage, the state automatically gets a big chunk of it, and then the rest of it goes into a pot, and it's divided out to the counties according to the county's population. Well, we know Coleman County's somewhere mid-range in our population, and we're first or second in miles of roads that the county commission has to maintain. So I'm not for that shared system, because we do not get back near what we produce in gas tax to Montgomery. So I think that's a terrible idea. And so, you know, I think that if anything, we could let the state do one and then the counties do their own. But again, you know, I don't know. It didn't have the momentum to pass 2 years ago, and I'm not sure that it will if it comes up next year.
Mr. Gudger.
I think if there's a gas tax that is passed, I think that the users that produce that particular tax, which are the people that are driving cars, driving trucks, 18-wheelers, are the ones paying that. So there'll be together, a fuel tax, a diesel fuel tax, and a gas tax put together. That money, the way it should be allocated, obviously should go back to the roads that they're on. They should come back to any of the bridges, especially with the highest priority. I had a meeting with the ALDOT director 2 weeks ago. He said every road in this state is ranked by five different categories. And he started listing every one of those categories. He said the problem with the state of Alabama right now is that as we continue to progress and have more cars, more trucks on our roads and our streets and our interstates, is that we're still having the same amount of money where we are now. We all want 157 out there done. Unless there's more funding for that we talked about earlier, the biggest challenge in the state, we're not going to be able to get 157 done until about 12 years from now, he said. If we're able to put more funding towards these roads and being able to pass a tax, if that happens, then that should go back into that five-step category process so that we're taking the highest priority with the most amount of people in this particular district and working our way down. And the way that's allocated from county to county and to individual municipalities is something that I would want to communicate with the senators when I got to Montgomery. Thank you.
Mr. Bowling.
If for some reason a gas tax passes, I'd fight to make sure the tax stays in the county it was produced by. I don't need a politician or a DOT director from Montgomery telling me how my roads are in the county I represent. I think I've got the county commission. So we need to make sure that the taxes, if they're passed, stays in the county. I don't want to see Jefferson County getting 90% of the gas tax because they've got the largest population in the state. And how you'd split it between the county and the city and within the county you're in, that's a question we'd have to work together on to find out, to make sure it's fair. Because there's more bridges out in the county that are dilapidated, causing our school buses problems, our farmers problems, causing problems for everybody. When we'll have to just work together and fight through it. I would hope that we could find the money through the waste and return it into DOT to try to solve these problems without creating an extra burden on folks. There's not going to be a simple answer. You're just going to have to be willing to fight the special interest and fight the people that's pushing for the gas tax to make sure that it's distributed fairly and properly amongst the citizens to get the most out of it.
Senator Busman.
First, I think that the gas tax is a regressive tax. It's going getting smaller and smaller. As we improve cars, as we go to hybrid cars, the gas money is not going to be there. So to increase the gas tax does not fix the problem. That's a Band-Aid. That's typical Montgomery, putting Band-Aids on things to get past another year or two. I'm not sure the people of Alabama want a gas tax. And so one thing that we would definitely have to do is it would have to be voted on by the people. I don't think the legislature ought to pass that. I don't think it's good that people come to me and say, are you willing to vote for a 9 cent a gallon gas tax if I guarantee you 157 is going to be done? Y'all, I don't care what you call that. That's bribery. That's asking for a vote for something in return. I'm not going to do that to the people of Alabama. There are many other ways that we can do things to fix the roads and bridges right now. We take $60 million out of ALDOT's road and bridge money and put it to other agencies. That's about a 3 cent a gallon gas tax right there. So when people go out and say we need money for gas for roads and bridges, that's not really true. We need money for other things. We don't need money for roads and bridges because we're taking the money out. And so my concern would be to make sure that the people of Alabama want that tax. And if you want to make a fair assessment or a fair use tax, then you put the tax on the tag. And when you come in every year to buy your tag, you have an affidavit that says, I put X number of miles on my car, and that's what you're going to be charged a tax for. If you're going to be fair about use tax and you're going to charge people for using the roads, you should mileage your car out, and you should pay your tax on the mileage of the cars. And that way, people that don't drive anywhere don't pay anything. The people that drive and use the roads and tear the roads up a lot, they pay the most. Thank you.
Mr. Morrow.
Just to be clear, you said it in Coleman County, how much? If a gas tax passes there, I don't want us to hear Mobile and Huntsville saying, well, we're a bigger area. We need more of the chunk of the money coming in than you do. No, the money needs to stay right here. And I agree your more traveled roads do need to see probably more share of those funds, but you have all these rural roads and bridges that have been ignored for a little longer, and those to me need to be first priority. When that money starts coming in, those need to be first priority. Get those fixed, get those back on par, then we can start moving more funds than they need to. A lot of people forget, though, we talk about voting on a gas tax or adding a gas tax. Well, we already are taxed. The state's just wanting permission to edit it, change it, and let's add a little more. So we're already being taxed. Everyone up here understands that we do have to do something with infrastructure. I agree. And I can agree with Senator Paul Busman on one hand. It is a Band-Aid. It's a temporary fix. As vehicles do get more efficient, that is going to be less money. What's the state's plan down the road? All right. We have to be looking toward the future, not to just a temporary fix. Thank you.
Mr. Cheney.
Let me start off by saying I'm fiscally conservative. I would never push a tax or any issue on the people that's not wanted. So for it to have been passed, it had to be a vote for the people. I agree with Senator Busman. That's not a legislative issue. That is on the ballot, the people decide to increase their taxes. Having said that, if a tax is increased, if they vote for a tax, I think that money should be spent locally. If I buy gas here on 31 or at the Pilot in Good Hope, that money should go to Good Hope. It should go to Coleman County, Coleman Cities. Or if I buy gas in Hansville, it should go to Hansville. I do not believe if I fill up my truck at the Pilot in Good Hope, Jefferson County should be getting that tax, or Mobile County, or Madison County, because that's done based on population. If you're going to do it and you're going to tax me, let it help the citizens of my county, my district, not anybody else's district. Thank you.
Okay. This question is for Representative Harbison. If you had the power, what one thing about state government would you change?
Golly.
That's a hard one.
Yeah. You know, I guess what I, the one thing that, that I would change is the way that we deal with the special interest groups in Montgomery. And people can say what they want to say, but it is a problem. You know, my very first day after being elected that I went to session, and Mayor Nail and Mayor Bartlett, they were in my office, and I got into a good fight with a lobbyist on my very first day over a bill that they were trying to push through that just, in my opinion, we were trying to fix an issue, and they were trying to sneak something in, that bill, that would completely change it. And I said, you know, this isn't right. Our job as public servants is not to sneak something like this in when we're trying to fix an issue. If you want to do this, you need to bring another bill, and we'll address it at that time. But, you know, a lot of times you can walk down the hall, and they're just lined up there, and you can hardly even get to your office because of the lobbyists there. And, you know, they're a good tool to have. A lot of times they can provide us information about what's going on and why it's needed. But at the same sense, you know, we've got to be able to vote to represent our people. And I think there needs to be maybe some set times or something, some better way of allowing them to have access to us other than just being in the hallways and being right there all the time because, you know, they do control a lot of the legislators. There's a guy that's my good friend, and we were talking about the prison bill back a few years ago, when we left on a Thursday, he said, oh, this is terrible. We can't pass this bill. This is, you know, going to cost so much money. And then by that Saturday night, he was calling me, and he was trying to get me to vote for it. You know, so I'm thinking, well, who got to him? I mean, you know, we all know it was someone. But I think that's something that we have to change. And a lot of the problems that we've had with the speaker and other elected officials across the state go back to the special interest groups.
Mr. Gudger.
Just in part of what I've been doing the last 14 years, I would say something probably different, and that would be communication. Without communication, there's no potential for growth. And without expressing my vision and my ideas of where I want to go and what I want to do to my peers, to my constituents, and to special interest groups, because whether you like it or not, they're there, you're not being able to fulfill your need as a legislator, whether it's on a local level or a state. I want communication and as much communication, and everybody have the same heart that we possibly can for the right reasons. For example, education, our greatest asset, are our children. Everyone should have that in mind first, besides if they're going to get some particular thing funded that helps them have a job. If it's mental health, they should be able to have the people first and how that funding is going to be placed before they just have some type of program where they're not really paying attention to mental health, which is what we're doing now. I would say that the answer to your question then would be communication, being able to have communication between our peers and our constituents to making sure that they knew exactly where we were and where our focus was. Thank you.
Mr. Bowling.
Ethics laws. We need to strengthen them. Man shouldn't be able to resign a position and stay out of jail. That's how you'll change the state. Get a handle on the special interest. Pass some ethics laws. Get the trust. Get the people where they trust their government again. Then you can do away with some earmarks. You can get more money into the classroom. You can get more money into the infrastructure. There's a lot of things you can change. But we have to have trust. And that's going to start with ethics reform. They did a good job in 2010. They went in with great intentions, but I don't believe they went far enough. They just had an ethics bill passed this last session that most of the general public, including myself, feel like it was a free pass for somebody to get out of trouble. We need to strengthen our ethics laws, not regress them, go back to where they were. That would be the one greatest thing I would do. Change our ethics laws, put a little trust back in the government, Maybe then we get rid of smear marks. We could help our kids with their education. And we could help our state prosper and grow.
Senator Busman.
I think if there's one thing that I could do or would do would be to change the committee structure in the state of Alabama. Right now, if a committee chairman chooses not to deal with a bill, that bill dies. So one person in the state of Alabama can dictate to the whole state of Alabama whether we even vote on a bill or not. In a committee, if I put a bill in a committee that will be helpful to the whole citizens of Alabama and the committee chair doesn't like that bill, the committee chair doesn't have to bring it up. If the committee chair doesn't bring it up, that bill is dead. And there's nothing I can do about that bill. If that bill gets out of committee and goes to the rules chairman, if the rules chairman, one person, decides not to bring that bill up or doesn't want to deal with that bill or doesn't want to have any of his friends have to vote on that bill so the public really knows how they feel about things, then he just doesn't bring it up. And so that's one thing that we should change. There should be a way that the majority of senators could make a piece of legislation move forward whether the chairman wants to or not. That's one of the biggest problems we have. That's one of the biggest problems you see with special interests. They get in with these powerful committee chairmen, and they stop bills at that section, and we never get to vote on. And then politicians will go out and say, oh, I'm for that, or I'm opposed to that, but they've never had to make a vote on it. And if you don't have to make a vote on it, you never know what they feel or how they feel until you make a vote on it. And so my change would be to change the committee structure a little bit to where there would be a way to make people vote and show people, you, how people feel and how they really vote. And when you do that, you'll see a big change in the way the legislature operates, because then you'll have information that you need to vote.
Mr. Morrow.
I'm going to make this one real simple for you. One thing to do automatically, pass a great ethics law and follow it. I don't understand why that is so hard to have a state government that is not keeping us out of the national news for the wrong reasons. Whether it's governor, legislatures, taking special interest money in exchange for votes. It is a slight embarrassment that as a nation as a whole, our state ranks in the top of corruptness. That is a blemish on us, and that needs to be fixed quickly. I just want to make, you know, with great ethics, you will make sure that your representatives and senators understand that they represent this state, their district, and their neighbors. Thank you.
Mr. Cheney.
Anybody that's dealt with any government agency in Montgomery or in Washington, D.C. knows that there is bureaucracy out the tail end. To do anything, you have to go through six people. They're all paid by taxpayers' salary. I would like to cut down on some of the bureaucracy that's going on in Montgomery if I could do anything. We've had some talk about ALDOT and how the governor makes one recommendation to determine the roads. That needs to change. There's no reason to have barriers down 278 to keep me from turning to Prime Business Solutions right there. That's just a small example about the bureaucracy that's going on in Montgomery. If I could change one thing in it, I'd like to cut down some of that fat and some of that bureaucracy. Thank you.
Mr. Steigen.
What comes to mind this past year would be special elections. How much did our state actually waste on special elections this past year? From our U.S. Senate to our House members, we've got one in our neighbor district. They've got a general next month, and they'll never step foot and represent that district on the House floor. So they're going to get paid for the remainder of period of time. They'll never represent that district. I think we need to change that. I think we need to get a better program, and we need to get a board. It doesn't need to be, the governor does not need to appoint it. It doesn't need to be party favored. It needs to be a fair and balanced decision. But that's what I would change just because of recent events this past year.
Okay, that was our last question, so we're going to go ahead and move into closing statements. Each person has 1 minute to make a closing statement. We're changing the order. We're going to go in alphabetical order now to give your closing statement. And so, Mr. Bolink, if you would, you've got 1 minute.
In closing, I just ask people to look at who's running. Look and see who's going to lead our state for the next 4 years. It's going to be candidates from your area that's lived here, that's worked here. See where they stand on issues regarding taxes, roads, education, industrial development. Look and see where they stand. Too much we let radio advertisements, news advertisements, and things sway our decisions. And we lose focus on the issues and what's important to our districts and our state. And I just hope that that your people will pay attention.
Senator Busman.
You know, I never thought that Paul Busman would ever be a senator. Never thought it. But as I work through my career and as I work with volunteers in public schools, as I worked growing the Good Samaritan Health Clinic, as I worked at the foundation at the hospital, I realized that we had many problems in Alabama and many problems in Coleman that needed to be fixed. I didn't see the leadership that was there. And so I decided to put my name in to run. And I did that because I didn't think people were looking out for the people that were in Alabama. I thought they were looking out for themselves and other people. I'm down there to look out for you. That's the only reason I'm down there. And I will never vote against the people that sent me down there that you sent me down there to represent. And I ask you humbly for your vote.
Mr. Cheney.
As I alluded to earlier today, my family has deep ties to this community, and it means a lot to me. I don't plan on going anywhere. I'm here to stay. I am an attorney here. I'm a small business owner here. I'm planning on getting married and living here, having kids here. Coleman County is just a special place to me, and I would like to go forward and represent this interest, Coleman County's interest here. But on the campaign trail, I tell everybody about my family a little bit. But I'm going to say this. Growing up, I was working over here at Cheney Seed and Feed, loading 50-pound bags of feed into a flatbed truck. I don't shy away from hard work. If you could give me the opportunity, I'd like to roll my sleeves up, work for you. We've heard a lot of issues here at this forum about some of the issues that are going across the state. We've got our hands full, every last one of us. But I'd like to go and work for you in Montgomery. So on June 5th, I would humbly ask for your prayers, your support, and your vote. Thank you so much.
Mr. Gudger.
Over the past 14 years, I've done everything in my power to help make this community the best that it possibly can be. Every decision that we've made, I've had to make with that young bride right over there with my two boys, and I've had to put the city first a lot of times while she's taking care of my boys and been at the playgrounds because it was the right thing to do for this community. I want to do the same thing to help serve this community, to help serve District 4, and every one of you, and be a voice for you in Montgomery. I wouldn't be running if I truly didn't feel that in my heart, and I want my boys to come back here in this community when they're able to after they get through with school, whatever they might do. I'm dedicated to this community. I love this community. I'll give it everything I have. I'm asking for your vote. I'm asking for your prayers and support, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. It's been fun. Thank you.
Representative Arbison.
4 years ago, I put my name on the ballot for District 12, and I promised y'all that I would go down and represent y'all, the people, and be y'all's voice and be a conservative voice. I feel like I have produced that on my promises. I've been ranked as one of the most conservative House members in the state of Alabama. You know, I've worked and tried to build relationships to bring money back to the district. I think we've brought back several million dollars in grants through ADECA and other programs. I just got $250,000 from the governor, and they started paving on Smith Lake Park Road this past week, which is a big thing for Coleman County. You know, I didn't come from a prominent family. I came from a good, hardworking family. You know, my mom's a healthcare, my dad's a factory worker. They can't go out campaign for me every day. You know, they're just average, hardworking folks. And it's been an honor to serve the people of Coleman, and I'd appreciate your consideration and vote. I'd get to serve you four more years. I don't do this for me. I do it to make a difference in this state. Thank you.
Mr. Morrow.
Back in the fall, after a lot of prayer and secondly speaking with my wife, I decided that I wanted to help the people of District 9 in this area. I believe we need someone who's grown up here, knows the district, has experienced our school system, knows our teachers. We need to make sure that we have a representative who remembers that he serves his neighbors in the district and serves this state. We need someone that will be a voice for all of the district and not just a select group of people or select area. I want to thank all of you for allowing us to be here today. It's been great speaking with all of you. You've heard a bunch of good points. I just ask for your support come June, and your prayers are much, much appreciated. Thank you.
Mr. Steigen.
In 2005, I started my company from the ground up. With no money, just a college degree in my pocket. Determination, hard work got me to where I am here today. I use that same value and principles to serve my public on civic organizations, through the Chamber of Commerce, through Kiwanis and Rotary. I will still serve my community, but a bigger community if elected. No matter the outcome of this election, I'll still be the same person still serving my community that I am today. I want to thank everyone for your time and y'all's invitation.
All right, how about we get a round of applause for our candidate speaking today? Again, thank you to each one of you for your willingness to be here today, to talk openly with everyone and share your thoughts and ideas. And thank you for your willingness to serve our communities. We appreciate that very much. And thanks to each of you for being here as well. We hope you found this event informative. And we encourage you to participate in the election on June 5th. If you have not registered to vote or need to update your voting station, Judge Tammy Brown's office is here today in the back of the room. The American flag's right there. You can stop by their booth here on your way out. She also has sample ballots if you'd like to pick one up. Thanks again to James R. Smith, our premier sponsor for this forum. There is still out, as you're leaving this part of the building, our Young Entrepreneurs Trade Show is still going on outside, so you can go see what those students have to offer, and be sure and stop by our booths. There's some great prizes being given away today, so if you haven't had a chance to sign up for those, you've still got a little bit of time to do that before you leave today. Thank you for attending our 2018 State of Communities. I would just personally like to say thank you to all the Chamber staff. I know you guys have been working on this for a long time and had a long day yesterday getting set up for it, and it's been a busy day today, but we appreciate the work that you all have put in to make something like this possible for all of us to attend, so thank you. Please drive safely on your way home, and we look forward to seeing you all again next year. Thank you.
I thought we were close to time.